Glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga, all glories to Srila Prabhupada. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale, Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Niti Namane, Namaste Sarasvati Deve Gauravani Pacharane, Nirvasesa Sunyavadi Paskatya De Satarane, Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Yuta Padakamalam Sri Gurun Vaishnavamscha, Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatham Vitam Stam Sajivam Sadvaitam Sadvadutam Parijana Sahita Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakam Vitamscha Panchakalpatrubhischa Kripa Sindhavye Vatapatitanam Pavanevyo Vaishnavevyo Namo Namaha. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So it's August 18th, 2022 in Gita Nagari. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 28, Paranjana Becomes a Woman in Her Next Life, Text 54. Hamsa vyaham cha tvam charya sakayo manasayano adbhutam antara velka sahasra parivatsaran hamsa vaham cha tvam charya sakayo manasayano adbhutam antara velka sahasra parivatsaran. One thing we might note here, Sanskrit has three, like singular and plural we have in English, but Sanskrit has three. It has singular, dual, and plural. So if it's two, that's a different kind of construction, and we see throughout this verse we have the dual with the sakyao, manasanao, the au is the dual. Hamsao, two swans. Aham, I. Cha, and. Twam, you. Cha, also. Arya, O great soul. Sakayao, friends. Manasa Ayanao, together in the Manasa Lake. Abhutam, became. Antara, separated. Va, indeed. Okaha, from the original home. Sahasra, thousands. Padi, successively. Vatsaran, years. Srila Prabhupada's translation. My dear gentle friend, both you and I are exactly like two swans. We live together in the same heart, which is just like the Manasa Lake. Although we have been living together for many thousands of years, we are still far away from our original home. Srila Prabhupada's purport. The original home of the living entity and the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the spiritual world. In the spiritual world, both the Lord and the living entities live together very peacefully. Since the living entity remains engaged in the service of the Lord, they both share a blissful life in the spiritual world. However, when the living entity wants to enjoy himself, he falls down into the material world. Even while he is in that position, the Lord remains with him as the Supersoul, his intimate friend. Because of his forgetfulness, the living entity does not know that the Supreme Lord is accompanying him as a supersoul. In this way, the living entity remains conditioned in each and every millennium. Although the Lord follows him as a friend, the living entity, because of forgetful material existence, does not recognize him. Hamsa vaham chitvam charya sakhayau manasayanau abhutam antara vauka sahasra parivatsaran. My dear gentle friend, both you and I are exactly like two swans. We live together in the same heart, which is like the Manasa lake. Although we have been living together for many thousands of years, we are still far away from our original home. So, of course, these particular series of verses in the Bhagavatam is one of the strongest Shastric evidences for the fact that a love of God and a relationship with the Lord is inherent in the living entity and was existing in the living entity before our conditioned nature. Sometimes people like to say that this particular understanding was something that Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, and Srila Prabhupada invented. But here we see very clearly, unambiguously, explicitly, literally in the Sanskrit, that this same knowledge is given. The only sort of refutation I have heard for this is, well, the whole Puranjana story is an allegory. Yes, it's an allegory, but these are the words of the Lord to the faithful disciple. Vaidarbhi represents the faithful disciple, Malayadwaja represents the guru, and the Brahmana here represents the Lord. And with verse after verse in this section, the Lord is saying very clearly that the relationship between the Lord and the living entity is eternal, that it existed before the living entities becoming conditioned in the material world. What really jumps out at me from this verse is the equality here between the Lord and the living entity, the love that the Lord has for the jiva, this analogy of swans and swans in a Manasa lake. Manasa lake is a very clear, pure lake. And as we know, in general, swans go to clean and pure places. The Prabhupada, in the Bhagavatam also, gives the metaphor of the swans and the crows. We have a children's game like that, swans and crows. the crows go to the garbage heap, and they go to the dead bodies, and the swans go to the clear bodies of water. So Krishna is giving this metaphor. You and I are two swans, he's saying to the jiva, and we live in the Manasa lake. We live in a beautiful place. So the swans here are as equals, and Krishna is looking at the jiva as an equal. Friendship is also equal. That in the different rasas, as explained by Rupa Goswami, the feeling of equality is there in friendship and in conjugal. In servitorship or neutrality, the Lord is superior, the devotee is inferior. In parental, the devotee is superior and the Lord is inferior. But in friendship, particularly, there is a full sense of equality. So here Krishna is having this sense of equality with the jiva and also a sense of beauty, a sense of grandeur, that the Lord sees the jiva as graceful, as beautiful. And obviously the Lord also sees the jiva as a desirable companion. The fact that the Lord has been with the jiva, as he explains here, perpetually. So let's look first at the fact that there's an implication here of equality. We're two swans, right? The Lord is not saying, I'm the king and you're the peon, saying we're two swans. And if we really meditate on how the Lord treats his pure devotees, we'll see that he treats them like himself. There are five kinds of liberation, and all of those kinds of liberation imply some sort of equality. Of course, the Sayuja liberation, which is rejected by the devotees, one is merged into the Brahmajyoti, or sometimes one is merged into the body of God. Now, those who are merged into the body of God experience everything as if they were God. And so there's this, Krishna is willing to give the living entities that kind of equality. If we think of the other types of liberation, having equal opulences with the Lord, I mean, that's astonishing. Our mood as conditioned souls is that we want to enjoy the opulences of the Lord separate from the Lord. And this mentality is epitomized by Ravana, because the personification of the Lord's opulences is the Lord's consort. Lakshmi, Sita, Radharani, etc. They personify the Lord's opulences. They are called Shri. Of course, Shri is one of the six opulences. At the same time, Shri is understood to be all of those opulences, all of the prosperity, all of the Lord's fortune, right? Shri means beauty. It also means charismatic leadership. Virya means strength, vigor, generally physical strength. It also means sexual virility and fertility. It can also mean mental strength, health, and vigor and health. Then we have Aishwarya. Prabhupada usually translates Aishwarya as wealth. Aishwarya literally comes from the word Ishvara. Ishvara expands into Aishwarya. So Aishwarya, the literal meaning is leadership, that you have others who happily and wonderfully obey you and follow you. And then we have Jnana, is knowledge, wisdom, understanding. And we have Vairagya, which is renunciation, freedom, autonomy, and you know, the freedom to walk away, to say no, to have your own boundaries, not to be obligated to anyone or anything. And then Yasha. Yasha is in the Bhagavatam. There's the personality of Yasha, who's the child of Dharma and Kirti. So Kirti literally means to talk about, like we have Kirtan. And so Kirti can mean fame, but Kirti could also mean infamy. People are talking about you negatively. But the child of Kirti in Dharma is people are talking about you because of your good deeds. So it's meritorious fame is Yasha. And Yasha implies a community. It implies family. There has to be somebody who's talking about your good deeds. So there's some sense of community. There's some sense of family. So these are the opulences of the Lord. I mean, if we think about in our life, each of us desires particularly some of these opulences in order to feel prosperous. Like some people, if they don't have beauty in their life, they feel poor. Other people, they're not so concerned. They don't really even notice whether things are beautiful or not. For some people, you know, health and strength is essential for them to feel prosperous. And of course, we'd all like to be healthy. But there are other people for whom, you know, if they're healthy or not, it's not so important to them in terms of feeling prosperous. For some of us, we want a high sense of autonomy and freedom and detachment in order to feel prosperous. And for other people, it's not so important. They're fine with other people telling them what to do and closely supervising them and so forth. And for some people, they really need community and society and to be thought well of in order to feel prosperous. And other people just really don't care what other people think of them. So what we are attracted to in terms of prosperity, it gives some indication of what sort of career we should have. But all of us, of course, would like to have all of this types of prosperity to an unlimited degree. and only Krishna has that. But no, it's not that only Krishna has that. Because one of the types of liberation is that Krishna shares his prosperity, his unlimited prosperity, with the jiva. He makes the jiva equal to him in prosperity. Right? Another liberation is to have the same form as the Lord. Now, that's not exactly the same. Although I did hear one devotee saying recently that they had some evidence that sometimes Krishna lends his Kastuba jewel to Uddhava. I don't remember reading that myself. But the Lord has some distinguishing characteristics of his own form, the Srivatsa hair and the Kastuba jewel. But the Lord is the most beautiful, and one can have a liberation where one has beauty equal to the Lord. So much so that when Gopakumar went to Vaikuntha, he kept seeing the devotees and thinking that they were the Lord. Oh, Vishnu, Vishnu, Vishnu. No, I'm not Vishnu. I'm a servant. I'm not Vishnu. I'm a servant. So the Lord is willing to share in equal measure his attractiveness. And one can be the constant companion of the Lord. Like Arjuna has this opulence. Wherever the Lord goes, Arjuna goes. Whatever the Lord is experiencing. And one can live on the same planet as the Lord. So we see that in many respects, the Lord is giving equality to his devotees. Now in the rasas, as we said, especially in the Sakya Bhav and the Madhurya Bhav, Krishna is also giving a sense of equality to the jivas. In the Vatsalya Bhav, Krishna is giving the jiva a superior position, that the jiva can chastise him and tie him up and instruct him and take a role of as his protector. You know, it's fascinating, the six symptoms of surrender. One of them is the Lord is my protector, the Lord is my maintainer. But in Vatsalya Bhav, the devotees don't exhibit that kind of surrender, usually. Sometimes, like in the Govardhan Lila, even the elders are saying to little seven-year-old Krishna, please protect us, which is interesting. If you have a catastrophe, you don't usually find a little child in the community and ask them to protect you. But my point is that Krishna is willing to share equality with the jiva. In fact, he enjoys that. He gets pleasure from that. I just contrast this mood of Krishna with the mood of the conditioned jiva. The kind of fundamental aspect of our conditioning is envy. And this envy has this malicious quality. I think Saurabh was talking about this yesterday. How jealousy doesn't necessarily imply malice. Of course, I was once in Russia where one devotee had prepared a seminar on envy. And the first 15 minutes of the seminar were the difference between jealousy and envy. And the translator told her that in Russia, it's one word. It's not two different words. And it took her like 10 minutes before she finally agreed that she had to adjust her presentation. But whatever one calls it, there's some degree of malice inherent in the conditioned soul's envy. And it's just like, you know, I'm okay if somebody's also got money as long as I have more. I'm okay if somebody has a nice car as long as my car is nicer. I'm okay if somebody has an attractive romantic partner as long as mine is more attractive. You know, I always want to be a little more than others. So this is envy. And in some places, Srila Prabhupada describes the difference between materialism and spiritualism. That in materialism, I'm unhappy at others' happiness, and I'm happy at others' unhappiness. And Prabhupada says we don't like to admit this, but it's the case. Now, sometimes we get a little glimmer. I was just reading in the introduction to the teachings of Lord Chaitanya how the fact that love of God is inherent in the soul is indicated by the fact that we do have little indications of love, even as conditioned souls. So there are times as conditioned souls where we feel genuinely happy at the happiness of someone else. This is most likely to occur when we feel that the other person is some sort of an extension of ourselves, like Prabhupada says, particularly between the mother and the child, because the child grows in the mother's body and is nourished by the mother's body. It's very easy for the mother to think that the child is almost an extension of herself, and therefore for the mother to feel that the child's happiness and my happiness are one is possible. Of course, this happens in other relationships too. We may feel, the father may feel that way towards the children, we may feel that way towards a spouse or a friend or so forth. People feel that way towards their football team, right? Which is really funny to me, because, you know, the football teams or the basketball teams, whatever, you know, their baseball teams, they're associated with a particular city. But because of the way sports is done, the players on that team, none of them may actually be born in that city or even live in that city or have any connection to that city at all. And so there's really no meaning to it. And the sports fans, what connection do they have, you know, with these players? There really is no connection. There's not even a, you know, like between the mother and child, there's some bodily connection between the father and child, between the spouses, but between the fans and the sports team, there's the connection is absolute concoction. And yet, you know, we won, our team won, and we have a big celebration that our team won. So there's some concept of this in this world, of being happy at the other's happiness. But spiritually, this is one of the tests of our spiritual advancement, is do we become happy at others' happiness? You know, if somebody's more spiritually advanced than we are we just joyful about it? Or are we like, oh, why is that person so advanced? I came to the movement before they did. And therefore, also in the fourth canto, in the story of Dhruva, Narada Muni says to Dhruva, I think this is one of the most astonishing verses anywhere. Narada Muni says, if when you see somebody who's lower than you, you're compassionate and you try to bring them up, if when you see someone who's equal, you make friends with them, and when you see someone who's higher than you, you're joyful and you serve them joyfully, you'll be free from all material miseries. And you're like, wow, I could be free from all material miseries just by that? Because by doing that, there's no envy. And all of our miseries come directly or indirectly from our envy. So here we see Krishna has no envy. We're two swans, he says. We're equal. We're two swans. There's no envy. And we conditioned souls are so hesitant to trust Krishna and to surrender to Krishna, because we have experience in this world that when we trust people, we get burned. That people appear to be our well-wishers in the sense that our happiness is their happiness. They appear to be our well-wishers, that they feel distress at our distress and happiness at our happiness. But more often than not, these people are more or less exploitive. That on some level, our so-called well-wishers are really using us for their happiness, and if we suffer in the process, that's not really very important to them. This is a very harsh statement, but as we progress in Krishna consciousness, we see that it has validity, especially when a person feels threatened or in a crisis. And I just experienced this recently with somebody I work with on a team in service and professes to be my well-wisher. And this person is going through a tremendous, painful, difficult crisis in her life. I mean, it is actually a very urgent crisis situation. And in that situation, she made some decisions without asking me that negatively impacted my own service. And when I said to her, you know, you really have to ask me first. You're just doing this without asking me. It puts me in a very difficult and uncomfortable position. You know, if we're on the team together and we're working together, I expect that you'll consult with me. And her response is, I have an urgent crisis. and I expect you to just basically tolerate any way I treat you. I shouldn't say it like that, but that was what it was. You know, I'm in an urgent crisis, and because I'm in an urgent crisis, I should be able to treat you however I want, and you should just take it. And, if I do something that harms your service, well, my service is in an urgent crisis. And this is generally what it is. Therefore, we say the non-devotees have no good qualities, because as soon as the person is threatened enough, and we consider threatening depends on what gunas we're most affected by. If we're in tamagun, we feel threatened very easily. If we're in rajagun, it takes more for us to feel threatened. If we're in sattvagun, it takes a lot for us to feel threatened. But it's only when we're fully in bhakti, nahanyate hanyamane sharire, that we realize that nothing can threaten us. So for Krishna, he's secure, nothing can threaten him. And he has no reason ever to jettison good qualities, and he has no reason ever to be envious of anyone. And so he's not going to burn us like another conditioned soul. He's going to treat us as an equal, which is, ontologically speaking, inconceivable. We're so small. He's everything. He is everything. In a portion of a portion of a portion of himself, he's breathing out universes, and we're in one of those universes on a tiny little planet in a tiny little place. Who even knows about Port Royal? Kidanagari, you're tiny. And then we're insignificant. And yet he's treating us as equal. It's beyond anything we can conceive. Now, not only is he treating us as equal, but he's treating us as beautiful. He sees us as attractive. To give this metaphor that we're a swan in a Manasa lake. This is also amazing. The word Krishna, Karsh, means to attract. Krishna is the all attractive. We're all attracted by Krishna. We may not recognize that what's attracting us is Krishna, but what's attracting us is Krishna. Krishna says, I am the life of all that lives. So, walking to and from the temple or walking around the property, I've seen rabbits, I've seen a beaver, I've seen a deer, and of course there are the trees, all these living beings, and they're all attractive because they're alive. Now, if I saw a dead rabbit or a dead deer, it wouldn't be attractive. Right? So what's attracting me is the life, and Krishna says, I am the life. Beautiful day, the sun shining, it's attractive. Why? Krishna says, I am the light of the sun. I am the heat and fire. The clouds in the sky are like the hair on my head. So what I'm really feeling attracted to is Krishna. Yesterday we had this rainstorm, but even that had a kind of beauty in the rain. And Krishna says, I withhold and send forth the rains. What we're really being attracted to is Krishna. He's the all-attractive. He's the basis of attraction in everything. If we understand the world according to Bhagavad Gita, chapters 7, 9, 10, and 15, where Krishna says, I am this, I am this, I am this. And if we understand the universe according to the descriptions of the universal form, like in Bhagavatam, Canto 2, and 8, and 12, then we'll understand that everything that attracts us. I'm attracted by clean water. Why? That taste of the water is Krishna. Yeah? But Krishna is finding the jiva attractive. How is that? Again, materially, that's not so much the case. People who are very attractive in this world, the extraordinarily beautiful, famous, wealthy persons, generally do not find their adoring fans to be attractive to them. Generally what they are doing is they are kind of sucking out from their adoring fans some enjoyment for themselves. They're relishing the applause and the adulation, the starry-eyed looks of their followers and minions and groupies and so forth. It's not that they're looking out at their supporters and feeling attracted to them. They're relishing the idea of themselves as being the all-attractive. And that's usually what we're trying to do in this world. We're trying to position ourselves so that other people are attracted to us. But Krishna likes to be attracted by his devotees. Of course, we also see that in this world. Right? We see that not only does a man want a woman to be attracted to him, but as Prabhupada will say, he's living to feel attraction to a woman. You know, a man likes to just look at beautiful women, even if the beautiful women are just in a photograph. He's enjoying that feeling of being attracted to someone else. Or parents enjoy feeling attraction for their children. So we can have some idea of how it is that Krishna feels attraction for the jiva. Or we may enjoy feeling attracted to our pets. We may feel enjoy feeling attracted to the cows, or if people have a dog or a cat or a bird or something. We may enjoy our feeling of attraction to plants that we're in our garden and our flowers. And you know, I take care of a garden in Hillsborough, and that sense of finding the garden attractive. So Krishna feels that way towards us. And in fact, without that, how can there be love? I mean, isn't that one of the components of love? That I find my lovable object to be fascinating to me. Right? If we're indifferent or bored by somebody, then we don't love them. Of course, in this world, even if we love people, we sometimes find them boring. That's the nature of our material relationships. But in genuine love, one never finds the lovable object boring. One never feels a sense of satiation. The mystery doesn't go away. Many, many years ago, I was reading a scientific study that one of the main components of long-lasting love is mystery. That you always feel there's something more to find out about the person or the animal, I suppose, or whatever that one loves. In fact, what's really amazing is that we feel this way about ourselves. We always want to learn more about ourselves. We generally find ourselves fascinating. Therefore, people are very interested to go to an astrologer or a palm reader or a tarot reader, or sometimes take these ridiculous quizzes on social media, you know, what Disney princess are you, or something completely absurd. But why are we doing that? Because we want to find out more about ourselves, because we're fascinated with ourselves and we ultimately love ourselves. This fact is very wonderfully explained in the Brahma Vimohan Lila, where Sukadeva Goswami asks Maharaj Parikit, he says, how is it that the residents of Vrindavan felt more attraction to Krishna, who took the form of their children, than they felt for their own children? How is that possible? You know, in this world, it would be very unusual to feel more attraction to someone else's child than to your own child. I mean, generally, we see our own children as the cutest, smartest, most wonderful little humans, and other people's children we may not quite see like that. So he was asking, and Sukadeva Goswami said that for all living entities, their most dear object of attraction is themselves. They may be attracted to their family, their community, but ultimately they're attracted to themselves. And the Lord is the self of the self. Prabhupada always uses this word, super soul. And we may have heard the word so many times that we don't really clearly think about what it means. Super soul. Super self, the self of the self. So ultimately, we're attracted to Krishna, and Krishna is attracted to us. He finds us beautiful. I mean, think about this analogy of a swan. a swan epitomizes beauty in the animal kingdom. I mean, in general, Bhagavatam says that the birds indicate the Lord's artistic sense. And I believe this is true both in the physical form of the birds and in the gracefulness of the birds in flight, or in some cases like penguins in swimming, and often the beauty of the birds, not all of them, of course, not like peacocks, but often the beauty of the birds in their song. So their form, their gracefulness, and their song. And swans, I don't think, have very attractive voices, but their forms are extremely graceful. Their way of swimming is beautifully graceful, and their way of flying is beautifully graceful. And if we're going to think, you know, what forms in this world epitomize grace and epitomize beauty, that would be one of them. It wouldn't be the only one, of course, but it would be one of them. I mean, it's interesting, a peacock is, the male of the species, is very beautiful, especially when they're in full tail feathers, but they're not very graceful. Whereas the swans are both beautiful and graceful. So again, they're that epitome. And swans are often used all over the world as a symbol of love. So Krishna sees us like that. Imagine that. You know, we often look at ourselves in conditioned life and don't see ourselves as beautiful and attractive. we often, you know, just if we think of ourselves in terms of our body, you know, we may like, man, well, I don't know if I really have that attractive of a body. And, you know, I have a really smaller nose and maybe better chin, and maybe I should be a little taller or a little shorter, or maybe I could be a little bit more filled out or a little thinner or something, you know, or maybe my hair could be thicker, or my hair could be thinner, you know, so we don't usually think like that in terms of the body and the mind, you know. We don't usually see our mind as beautiful. But Krishna is seeing us, the real us, as beautiful. And then Krishna is seeing us as a desirable companion. I mean, this is also almost inconceivable. He's living with us, even in this world. So, as I was saying in the beginning, in these verses, it's very, very clear that we have rebelled against the Lord, and in our rebellion, we've come to the material world. And in the material world, we're all like little Ravanas. We're trying to enjoy the opulences of the Lord separately from the Lord. We're really like, you know, some rogue who tries to steal a man's wife, or, you know, tries to steal somebody's property and opulences. So usually, like, if somebody tries to steal your possessions or take away your spouse, generally you don't want to hang out with that person. You know? You usually want them punished. But Krishna hangs out with us. And if we compare, I mean, he doesn't just hang out with us, he's in our heart. He's listening to every thought. I mean, we know this. I was giving the example the other day, how right after I moved into the ashram, the first day Kishore were installed, the second day we went on Harinam Sankirtan, and I was thinking, I don't have, if I'm going to do this regularly, I need a different pair of shoes, and I have very small, hard to fit feet. I was thinking, I need to get a pair of shoes, and we came back after Harinam, and one of the devotees said, hey, you know, there's somebody left these shoes here. It's an extra set of shoes. Could you use them? And they were perfect for Harinam, and they fit me perfectly. So Krishna heard my thoughts. Right? We've all had that experience. Or I remember one time I was in Auckland, and I was walking back to my room, and I thought, I haven't had cashews for a while. I'd really like some cashews. And the thought came and went like in 5 seconds. And when I came back to my room, there was a bag of cashews rubber band to my doorknob. So Krishna is hearing all of our thoughts. He's aware of all of our feelings, all of our desires. He knows everything that we do, and he's interested. Try to find another jiva who's interested. And you just try. Take someone who you care about and who cares about you and say, hey, can I talk to you for 2 hours and tell you everything I did today? The other person would be bored. You know, even if there's like a biography of a famous person, let's say it's 200 pages, it's just the highlight of their life. It's not everything they did, can you imagine? Everything they did, everything they thought, everything they felt. But Krishna cares. And he cares even when we're in rebellion. He cares even when we've separated ourselves from him. Ishwara sarvabhutanam rijesha janatistati brahman sarvabhutani yantrarudrani maya. That's inconceivable. What friend do we have like this? Who treats us as an equal? Who will equally share everything with us without envy? Who sees us always as beautiful and graceful? And is fascinated by us, attracted by us? And who really likes to be with us. I mean, this is one of the main complaints you find among many married couples. You know, you don't spend enough time with me. You work too many hours. You have long work hours, then you go hang out with your buddies. You know, you don't spend much time with me. Krishna is spending all of his time with us. Every single jiva. I mean, when the cowherd boys eat lunch with Krishna, they're in concentric circles that look like the colors of the rainbow. And each cowherd boy is perceiving that Krishna's turned towards him. You know, I can't see someone who's behind me. I'd have to turn my whole body. But each cowherd boy is perceiving that. Each of Krishna's thousands of queens is thinking, wow, my co-wives don't get much time with our husband because he seems to always be hanging out at my house. Each gopi in the Ras Lila is thinking, Krishna's only dancing with me. Now, with all of that evidence of being our really well-wishing, intimate friend, treating us as an equal, seeing us as beautiful, graceful, and attractive, and caring about every single thing we do all the time. I think one of the saddest things is what Prabhupada says here in this purport. The living entity does not know that the Supreme Lord is accompanying him as the Super Soul. Although the Lord follows him as a friend, the living entity does not recognize him. That is a tragedy. That is, I mean, how much grief is there that we have such a loving, well-wishing, eternal friend, and we don't even know that he's sitting right next to us. I mean, materially imagine if, you know, these Jeff Bezos or Bill Gates or Elon Musk, you know, one of these wealthy people was sitting right next to you saying, all my wealth is yours to do with whatever you like. And we weren't able to see him. We weren't aware that he was there. And he's like, hey! So multiply that by unlimited times. And that is our great misfortune. Therefore, the beginning of knowledge and spirituality is humility. That no matter what I have, who I am, if I don't see, if I'm not aware of my well-wishing friend, then I am a grade A, number one, royal idiot. Sometimes people ask me, you know, what should I call you? And I said, you can call me idiot. That'll work. All right, please excuse me that I'm in this cabin, and my choice was to let you see the background as it is, which I have basically no control over, or to blur the black background, which means my clothes and my hands disappear into the blur. So I hope this worked out better than going from the temple room. So anybody have any questions, comments, additions, subtractions, chastisements? Ananya Bhakti.
Hare Krishna, Mala. Thanks for class. Your last point that you were just making, how, I guess throughout the lecture, but in general, at least speaking for myself, I don't often feel like I notice Krishna's presence in my life or feel his care. Like sometimes something will happen and I'm like, oh yeah, he's here, he's taking care of me, he cares about me. But I would say like 90% of the time I go through my day and I don't have any like awareness of that. I don't believe it. Sometimes even when something happens, maybe now it's a little less, but even then I kind of like doubt it. I was like, was this Krishna or is this just luck? So I'm just wondering, how can we, is there anything we can do to like, I guess, be more proactive in that sense, to like be aware and notice his care and his presence in our lives? Or is that just something that's going to come naturally as we get purified?
Well, it will come naturally as you get engage in the process of bhakti, but part of engaging in the process of bhakti is making a conscious effort to be aware of Krishna's presence. That is, in fact, the essence of the practice of sadhana bhakti. It's explained in Nectar Devotion Chapter 2 that sadhana bhakti begins by thinking of Krishna. So how could we do this? All right, well, we have many, many ways that we can be aware of the presence of Krishna. And I know I don't have much time, but maybe I can actually pull this up. That's what's nice about giving a class on my own computer, is that I can immediately go to one of my files. And it's just a question of finding it. Here we go. So it's a question of practice, and I would suggest that each day you take one of these to practice with. Let me get to that section. Just give me a minute here. Thank you for your patience. Okay, so I'm going to, going to share my screen again. So it is a question of, let me open this up and, okay. It is a question of our intensity. Like the residents of Vrindavan, they have a sense of intensity. When Krishna's in the coils of Kaliya, they feel that everything's invested in him. So that is one way. Another way is by thinking of the different things that Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, as I was saying, chapter 7, 9, 10, and 15. Krishna is the light of the sun. He's the light of the moon. He's the heat and fire. He's flower-bearing spring. He's our ability. He's the fragrance of the earth, which translates to the tastes, the various tastes in our food. He's the purifiers, he's the wind. So let's try right now. So all of us have heat in our bodies. And all of us have some heat in our environment, or we would be dead. So let's just take a moment and become aware of that. Become aware of the warmth in our environment. And the warmth in our bodies. So warmth is associated with life. Something's dead, it becomes cold. Warmth is associated with love. We talk about, you know, a warm embrace or the cold shoulder. So for a moment, take a moment to feel that the warmth, the heat in your body and in your environment is Krishna exhibiting his life and his love. Krishna says he's the father of all living entities. If we have a loving father and we're interacting with our loving father, if we're a father, whenever we see animals who are fathers, we can think about Krishna. Krishna says, I am the Omkara. When we're chanting our Brahma Gayatri mantra, when we're chanting Prabhupada's Pranam mantra. But he also says, I am the sound in ether. Like right now, I don't know if you can hear it, but we have the pavers outside making a lot of noise. But Krishna is that sound. Krishna is the sound of the crickets. Prabhupada says, if you can't absorb yourself in the sound of Hare Krishna, then realize that Krishna is all sounds, that all sounds are originally spiritual. Krishna says he sex life according to religious principles. When we see married couples who are happy with each other and respecting each other, raising nice children, we can remember there is Krishna. Krishna says in many ways that he's the seed. Whenever we see seeds sprouting, oh, there is Krishna. Krishna says he's immortality and he's also death. When we see how the death of beings like trees and plants give rise to the life of other beings, he says he's the healing herb. He says that he is sacrifice and, of course, the most dear friend. He is the chanting of the holy names. He is the ocean. He is the lion. He is time. So many things that Krishna says, I am. And each day we can pick one of these and meditate on it. How is Krishna the abode? What does that mean? Krishna is the abode. I have my abode. I have my house. But Krishna says, I am the abode. What is that feeling of home? How is that Krishna? The resting place. If we sit on a chair, that sense of a resting place is Krishna. Of course, Krishna is in the holy name. We can remember Krishna's form, whatever is our favorite form of Krishna. We can remember Krishna's qualities, how much he cares for his devotees. Rupa Goswami lists these 64 qualities. And we can see them around us whenever we feel happy. Oh, that's one of Krishna's qualities. He's happy. Whenever we see someone with beautiful features. Oh, yes, Krishna has the most beautiful features. Whenever we know of someone who's famous. Oh, Krishna is the most famous. Whenever somebody's really expert. People were talking yesterday about how Abe is an expert sourdough maker. Oh, Krishna is the most expert. And we can think of any of Krishna's pastimes. I'm sure there's some pastime that you would love to see, that you would love to be in. So many wonderful pastimes. So each day before you go to bed or right when you wake up, you can pick something. What am I going to focus on? How is Krishna manifest in the material energy? Or maybe one of Krishna's names and what it means. Or a particular form that we're going to meditate on, or looking for evidences of Krishna's quality, or a pastime I'm going to meditate on. And just make that a practice. And if you can do that successfully for 2 minutes in a day, celebrate that. Say, I did that 2 minutes today. I had an awareness of Krishna. Maybe tomorrow it can be 2.5 minutes. Maybe gradually it'll be 5 minutes. And then before you know it, all day, you'll be aware, there is Krishna, my dear most friend. So I think it's time to greet the deities. I hope somebody has a computer up with Zoom so we can all see Radha Damodar. And they're paving the road here, so I hope I can get out. I think I might be hemmed in. to my room by the pavers. Thank you very much for this opportunity to speak about Krishna, our dearmost friend. Thank you to Srila Prabhupada, without whom I would know nothing about the Supreme Lord who is sitting right next to me in the heart. I would be going on blindly, Om Agina Tamirandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Takshanu Militanjana Tasmai Shri Guruvain. Srila Prabhupada Ki. Thank you.